Why do these things just occur to you?
That's true.
So tonight we salute Ralph Nader, one of our favorite songwriters. As you bring up there, Large. There. Thank you. The other day, Hello, wait, I got to get this thing adjusted. We're getting terrible hum in here. Why are we getting such a hum here? Hello. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, all right, that's not too bad. The other day, I'm sitting in this office. I'm going to see this accountant. And isn't that exciting, seeing an accountant? That's always good for air. Have you ever seen an accountant, man, about anything? That's exciting, isn't it? Certainly is. Oh, yes. I cannot imagine myself being an accountant. They have a certain view of life that just eludes me totally. I'm glad there are accountants. I don't know. Come to think of it. I don't know whether the world would be worse off or better off without accountants. But nevertheless, I'm sitting in the office there waiting to see this accountant. And I'm looking at a paper. You've got an old paper there, a newspaper, and looking over. And I had just filled out a form. How long has it been since you had to fill out a form where you had to write down the last 15 jobs you've held? Have you ever had to do that? Well, I had filled out this form, and I couldn't figure out, 15 jobs. I can't. Now, when you fill out a form like that, do they mean the 15 places you've worked for or 15 jobs? That's different. You can do the same job at 27 different places, you know. You follow what I'm saying there? In other words, if you're a short order cook and you work in 37 different diners, have you had 37 different jobs? Or have you worked in 37 different places and done the same job? Well, so I filled it out literally. Instead of putting down the last 15 places I worked, I put the last 37, 15 jobs. Well, I'm sitting there thinking, boy, I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever told a story on the air about this job, because there are certain jobs that traumatize you so much that you don't even want to think about them years after you've done them. 5 minutes after you quit, it's like you're erasing some wart off your head. You don't want to talk about it or think about it. And I got into this inadvertently. Have you ever gotten a job through a placement service at school? Well, all right, I did. And one summer, this was in college, innocently, I go down to the placement bureau. They had a thing, big thing on the bulletin board. It says, if you need a summer job, come to the placement bureau. Exciting jobs are coming in our way all the time, and one of those jobs can come your way. Come on down to the placement bureau. So, it's about the last part of May. School's going to be out in a couple of weeks. And I was debating, should I go to summer school? I didn't want to go to summer school. There's certain guys that are so excited about getting into life, getting schooling done and all that stuff, that they go to summer school night and day. Not me, I didn't do that. As far as I was concerned, I could still be going to school if I was 110. So, nevertheless, it is now summertime. I got to have a job. So, I go down to the placement bureau, and I sit down next to this lady. And this forever taught me, don't get jobs through placement bureaus. So I sat down next to her, and she said, let's take a look at your credits here and see what you're doing. She said, is there anything you'd like particularly to do, or that you're interested in doing? I said, yeah, I'd like to be the bat boy for the Chicago White Sox. She said, we don't get that kind of job here, bat boy. I wonder how you do get jobs for bat. I said, yeah, I'm interested in that. I like to do that. She says, no, we don't have that sort of thing. Let's see, is there anything else you'd like to do? I think, well, let's see. No, not really. I'd like to look for quarters at the beach, maybe something like that. That'd be kind of good. If I get a job for some outfit that's, hunting for rare quarters on the beach, maybe I'd do that. No. She says, yes, I see you have a B+ in English here. I said, yeah. I said, well, here, this is something you might be able to do. I thought, what the hell is getting a B-plus in English got to do with getting a job? You know? She says, let's see. Yes, you might just be just right. She says, here, here's a card. Take it to this address. And if you get the job, would you please call back so that we can cancel the notation here at the office, would you please? And tell them we recommend this for you. So, well, thank you. And I got a blue card that had an address on it, had a phone number, and it said 9 to 11. And then an exclamation point, it said applications and interview. So I go trotting down to this address, which looked quite innocent. It was a very innocent-looking address. I'm trotting down there. And there were about 10, 15 guys waiting to talk to this lady who was doing all the interviewing. So I sat out in the front there, and I said, I'm talking to the other guys. And they were from schools, from all around. And I said, any of you guys got any idea what this is? And he says, no. Just sent down. I said, well, I don't know. You know. Probably some great job. So we waited. Each one got called. And finally, my turn came. And the lady said, now, would you tell me why you feel that you're qualified for the work that we're offering? I said, well, I got B-plus in English. She said, that's very interesting. Is there anything else that you feel qualified to? Why do you feel that does it? Oh. Not everybody gets B-plus in English. Not from Miss Fife, anyway. Not in English composition, too. She said, well, that's very interesting. She said, what would you tell me this is? She holds up this pen. I said, well, it's a pen. The damnedest interview I ever had. She said, no, but what kind of a pen is that? I said, well, it looks like a Schaefer pen. She said, how would you describe it? It's a, I figured, what the hell's going on here? I said, well, I'd describe it as a, the newest Schaefer pen. Just, thank you. Did you tell the next man to come in? I said, okay. It's a long baby. So I go out to the ante room, and I said, hey, the next guy go in. I says, by the way, if she gives you the pen thing, I said, try to find out what the hell she's up to. So he goes trotting in. The next day, I get a thing in the mail that says, would you please report to Goldblatt's department store? Such and such an address on State Street. It's a big store in Chicago, see? So I said, well, I'll be darned. I got a job. Well, I go down to the place down there, and they send me through the personnel department. At no point did they tell me what my job was. Apparently, they thought I knew. So I go through the whole personnel thing, and I finally get down to the end where they ask you, what department you're going to work in, and they assign you to the notions department or the men's clothing department. A guy calls up and says, send him right up. We need him right now this morning, and it's me. Well, I get on the elevator, and I walked into the office, and it was a shock. I had a job, the kind of job that I would venture to say, Matt, that most people in their lives don't think of this guy, the person who does this thing, quite possibly ever. Every last one of you is familiar with the work of one of these people, though. I mean, there is no way for you to be not familiar with it. All right, I'll give you an example. Let me give you an example. All right, I'll give you an example. You ready for it? Our exclusive French import that costs just $15 in men's and women's sizes, $10 for children's, sure-footed and comfortable. It's a gem for hiking, walking, working, playing. The thick rubber heel sole is deeply treaded and really flexible. Tops of mini checkered denim are bulk-free and pliable. You must see them. No, not a copywriter. Now, what do you think that is? Well, what is a copywriter? A copywriter is somebody who writes radio commercials or TV commercials or something. Well, I'll tell you what it is. I was hired to write the stuff that appears in the weekly and the daily ads of a major, and I mean a major, department store. Now, when you see, now that's not quite the same as a copywriter. See, I should really not say that. A copywriter is a special category. A copywriter is a person who writes copy for more or less elegant things. But what, for example, who do you think writes the stuff that's underneath the picture of the replacement gasket department of the summer catalog for the Sears Roebuck automobile parts supplement? Is that a copywriter or what is he? Well, I walked into this office. It was kind of a strange-looking office. They had great big drawing tables all over the place, and I remember the guy's name. He looked like a weasel. He had on a black vest. His hair was shaped like a horseshoe right on the top of his head. He was that kind of bald. You know, the guy had a little horseshoe around his head, and his name was Snodgrass. And Mr. Chester Snodgrass, I walked in to see Mr. Snodgrass, and I said, I'm here to report to Mr. Snodgrass. He said, oh, my God, he's here. Hey, Fred, come over here, Emily, come on. And the next thing you know, there's three people rushing over to me, and Snodgrass says, this is our new one. And I said, hi, King, our new one. I said, what do you mean, our new one? He says, quick. He said, we've got a deadline. We've got work to do. He said, we got to get this thing out. He said, by noon. And here it is, about 10 o'clock in the morning. He says, we got to get up by noon, fast. Give him the fur stuff, quick. Well, for the next 2 hours, I had to write stuff like the following. Ermine-trimmed dyed muskrat. Usually $189. Now only $139. 2 days only. And you think that's easy, don't you? I tell you, it's not so easy. Well, then you get so bored. So then you have to start making variations like this. You say, only a few of a kind. $189, our usual price. Now just a low, 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 $139. And they'll come over to you and say, hey, that third low was really great. You get so that you can appreciate the work of the guy that does these things. And so Snodgrass came over to me, and I had written one for a muskrat dyed short belted coat. And he came over and he says, Em, come over here, which was the girl that worked there. He says, come over here. I want you to see what I'm driving at. And she says, what? He says, now, you notice what he does with the exclamation points. He said, you know, how many times have I told you people that two exclamation points says more than three? And more than that, it says more than one, but it doesn't say too much. I had hit upon a principle, two exclamation points. And so I said something like, now, two exclamation points. Well, I got so much in the routine of this that it became kind of dull for the first two or three days. I'm writing this stuff, and then it came about that moment of great expectations, right out of Dickens. That Friday, our weekly throwaway ad, which was a great big supplement. If you know these things they give out in the suburbs, once in a while you'll get the Abraham and Strauss supplement that you'll get in the newspaper. You get about 10 pages. Well, they had a newspaper, the Goldblatt people had a newspaper that was distributed in the suburbs. And it was about 8 or 9 or 10 pages long, and it had the big newspaper-sized thing. And it had all the different departments, the notions department, the stationery department, the sporting goods department, all these different departments had a part of this paper. Well, I was in charge of the fur copy. I don't know why I was assigned fur, but I was assigned all the stuff they had on furs, lady fur coats. Well, that Friday, they came in from the printers with that week's paper. And they spread it out, and you have to proofread. Each guy proofreads his own department. So they bring in my department, which is the fur department. And I can't tell you how excited I was. The first time I ever saw anything I wrote in print. And it said something like, the word would say, the phrase would be, ermine-dyed muskrat. Now, exclusive, ours alone, in the latest chic Paris styles, copies from $2,000 originals, usually $349.99, now just $279.88. 3-day sale only, second floor fur department. Just looks so beautiful. Well, I took that paper home that night, and my mother, they were so proud. I was a writer now. Well, now, wait a minute. The point I'm making here in this whole thing is that no matter what it is you see in your life, some guy's proud of it. Some guy is proud of that thing. So you'll see a sign. You'll go to a gas station, see, and the sign will say, "Men." Somebody painted that sign. Somebody wrote that, "Men." And he stood back and he looked at it proudly. And every time he comes to the gas station, the only thing he sees is his sign. It says, "Men." The next time you look at an ad, can you imagine? Look at this picture here now. I'm just going to show you something here. Look at this man. Now, this is a drawing, you know. Somebody did this drawing. Well, now, do you ever really think about those people that do those drawings? Sit there with their charcoal and their airbrushes and all that stuff. Well, I got to know those people, see? And there was a guy who used to do the airbrush work. He'd do these beautiful drawings, great big. They're done on great big sheets of white, clear white hard surface paper, man, when they actually do these things so that they reproduce well. And I used to be amazed that this guy could sit down and in the space of about, well, 6-7 hours, he'd work maybe 6-7 hours like that, and he would turn out in the 6-7 hours, he would turn out like 25 or 30 fantastic drawings like this. He'd draw a great shoe. Then he would draw this. You know, and he'd sit there and he'd shade away. Well, then what he used to do, now this is something I really shouldn't be telling you, that everybody has the other side. You know, in radio and television, I suppose you realize, I know they have this in the movie industry. I saw an unbelievable film one time that a friend of mine who was in a big-time movie studio had collected. And it was a collection of obscene outtakes. In other words, stuff that hit the cutting room floor where various actors and actresses said unbelievable stuff in the middle of the scene. Like, you know, they blew sky high. And so here's Audrey Hepburn looking like a nun or something, and there's a nimbus around her, and all of a sudden she blows the scene and she says an unprintable word. Well, he had a fantastic collection of all this stuff that he had gotten from the studio that he worked for. Well, now in radio they also have the same thing. You've heard of the blooper stuff, but in there's an underground radio collection of various types of obscene records, correct? You've heard of them. Everybody knows who Lord Windersmere is and that whole crowd, okay? All right. Shepard finally got through. Well, all right, you know who he is. Well, in the ad business, there is the exact equivalent that the ad men, the guys that do these drawings, have large collections of obscene drawings that have actually been published in newspapers. In other words, they get away with it. And this friend of mine, he had this tremendous collection of drawings. These are just fashion drawings. Now, look sometimes very carefully at fashion drawings. Just keep looking at them, and you will find some of these fashion drawings go a little bit beyond showing you what the new skirt length is going to be like. See, well, he had this great collection, and it was an underground collection of them. And one of the things he used to do every couple of weeks, you know, just to let off steam, he himself would do a series of obscene drawings of fashion models of obscene drawings. It's terrible stuff. and the great fear around the shop, as they call it, was that one day one of these things would get stuck into the proofs that they send off, and it would come back. You know, there it would be. Well, something like that, very like that, did happen. And I'm going to tell you what happened in the sport. Thank God it didn't happen in my department. But there was another guy guy named Warren. It's funny when you get talking about these jobs, but the day it really hit the fan at the store was Warren, who was on the next desk. Warren was in charge of what they call hard goods, which meant that Warren would write the captions for hardware, for pots and pans and cookware and all that kind of stuff. And I was in charge. At this point, I had gotten not only fur, but I was dealing with men's shirts and that kind of stuff, you know, like a thin, well, beautifully striped, magnificently cut, a tapered waist with that extra-long shirt tail that you're all looking for, men, usually found only in the more expensive imported shirts. Now, one time only. See, I even talk like that. I know how to write this stuff. I can sit down and knock it out. Well, one day, and it got through. It got through our proofreading. Warren did an ad in the sporting goods department for 22 rifles. Well, now, you've probably seen the sporting goods department. Once in a while, you'll see an ad for Target rifles, 22s, a single-shot Winchester, single-shot Stevens, and that kind of stuff. Well, the price of this gun was $29.95. That was the actual price they were selling the gun at. $29.95, and it was a single-shot Winchester or something like that. And it came with a cut. Now, perhaps you wondered about where they get all these pictures and stuff when they run these ads of various things. Well, all the departments, for example, our department, we had great files of pictures. I could get a picture of almost anything I wanted. For example, if I wanted a penguin, I'd just go through the files under P, and then I would find a cut of a penguin. There was actually a little cut, and I could put it in the ad. Here, for example. I'll show you how they do this. I'll give you all examples of it. If I could get a big... Now, here, here's an example of it. Yeah, here. Here's one right here. Now, here's an example. Here's a handbag, see? Now, that handbag, that bag will be kept, that picture of that bag will be kept in the file of the guys that did the copy for this thing. And so the next time he needs a handbag, he may not be advertising this. It may be just a model, a picture of a model advertising a fur coat, and they need a handbag, and she's got this handbag next to her. He'll just reach in under handbags and pick this thing out, and you paste it up. And I was doing all this. You didn't know that I had any background in this, did you? Well, it's one of those things that... it's just a Freudian erasure. I just erased it from my mind. It was such a bad time. It began to get me so sick. I used to work 37 hours a day at this rotten job. I got so tired of it that I couldn't stand it. And I had paste all over myself, and I was constantly writing this jazz. Well, anyway, Warren's gun, $29.95, is what the price of this thing was. And it was a Saturday morning. Our paper comes out on Friday. In other words, our big special paper for the big Saturday, Monday, the Dollar Day sales, which would be through Monday and through Wednesday, the paper would come out on a Friday. So we're sitting around the office. Here it is. Everything's cool. We're sitting around the office. It's now about 10 o'clock in the morning. The office opens at 9:45. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. When Mr. Snodgrass picks up the phone, the store opened, by the way, that store opened on a Saturday morning at exactly 10 a.m. 10:01. It must have been 10:01. The phone rings. Snodgrass picks it up, and he had a big open cage. He kind of would survey all of us. Snodgrass picks up the phone and says, "Hello? What? Oh, come on. 29. Well, wait a minute. We proofread that. Well, it must be at the printers. Well, what do you want me to do about it? It's too late now." And you hear a lot of yelling on the phone. He hangs up, and his face is white. He says, Warren, get page two quick." And Warren comes up with page two. He says, "Quick, give me page." Our ad was advertising single-shot Winchester Target model rifles for 22 long and 22 short cartridges, $2.95. Friends, for $2.95, you can't even get a decent water pistol. You agree, don't you? $2.95, and we had turned out 110,000 copies of this paper. Somehow, that dot had gotten misplaced. You know what saved us? You curious what saved us? At the bottom of the copy, it said a special purchase. It says these accurate, highly respected guns are now on a special purchase price, blah, 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 $29.95. And all the way down through the copy, it was talking about how groovy these guns are. You see, this is a special target practice gun. And at the bottom, it said one line which saved us. It said, as long as they last. Well, you know how long they lasted? They sold out their entire stock of these guns. They must have had 1,000 of them. They had to sell them all, by the way. If they didn't, then they were in real trouble. They had 1,000 or so of these guns, which, you know, was a big... This is a big department store, you know. And they figured they sold 1,000 of those guns in less than 15 minutes. At $2.95 a clip. And I just want to tell you... I'll never forget the repercussions of this. Now you've all heard that the mythology that's going on around about that. If something is advertised that they have to sell it to you at that price, you've all heard this. Well, in some cases it is true. In many cases it is not. No, it depends on the wording. The wording is very, very important in these things. And in our case, we had to sell only what we had there at that price. And we did. We sold 1,000 of these things. And the guy from the sporting goods department was purple. He was out of his bird. Apparently this guy, you know, for months he'd been preparing this. He was going to get these guns at a special sale. $29.95. They're regularly sold at something like $49.95, see? And at the sale price of $29.95 was a big deal. Well, he expected to make about 8 cents on each rifle, you know, at that point. He turns out and sells the whole schlemoo at $2.95 each. You couldn't even get a replacement screw for the handle for that. And the guy was out of his bird. Well, from that time on, Snodgrass would walk around back of our tables as we're writing this stuff, because apparently somebody called him up in the front office and said, one more like that, Snodgrass, and the whole ball game is over. Well, that was the time that the job stopped being fun. From that minute on, Snodgrass would pick every word you wrote to pieces. And every minute you're sitting there, you're typing this stuff up. Like, for example, mixed dots and stripes. This is typical of what I'd write. Here's an ad for Lord & Taylor. It says, mixed dots and stripes and lots of rickrack, and comes up with one of summer's freshest ankle-length dresses, all cool cotton in navy, white, yellow, and red, for sizes 6 to 14, $130 in the salon, third floor. Now, somebody worked on that. They didn't just knock that out. They worked on that. Well, I got so that I hated that job so much. I don't think I've ever had a job that I hated as much as that job. And it was on that job, not working in the steel mill, not working at the piano factory, but it was at that job that I formed Shepherd's now famous implacable hatred of work. Every morning I would go into that place and I would dread it. I wonder how many people work all their lives at a job that they dread every morning going in. Oh, plenty. I would guess probably, I hate to even think of the percentage of people. But it's a sickening feeling. It's a feeling that I don't think there's any other feeling quite like it. It's part of it is self-hate, because you know you can quit. You can quit. You know, nobody's got a big ball out of your foot but a chain. You know, but somehow you keep going in. Well, every morning I would go through the basement employees' entrance in this big department store, and go through the back there where all the packing cases were and all the empty cardboard boxes and all the Excelsior and all the jazz was piled up of the day's unpacking and all the shipments had come in. And I get in the employee's elevator and I'm with all these same people every day. There's these ladies that are going up to the furniture department, and I would go up to the 11th floor where they had all the offices, among them the ad offices and stuff. And already I'm beginning to get that fuzzy feeling. not only a fuzzy feeling, but a feeling of, oh, I hated it so. And it was there were other things that I hated about it. The minute I would walk into the office, it was the routine of things. I'd walk into the office, and this woman, Emily, every morning she's painting her fingernails with this kind of coral-colored fingernail polish. And I can remember the smell, you know, that acetone smell that you smell with fingernail polish? The smell of the acetone mingling with the smell of the tea. It's a curiously sickening smell. I walk in there, and here's Emily sitting, and without looking up, she's always working on her fingernails. She's looking down, and the tea is coming up, and she'd say the same thing every morning. This is what she would say every morning. She never miss a beat. I'll take the phones this morning. Well, now that meant, don't answer any phones, I'll answer the phones. So answering the phone in that department meant you were kind of a big deal for some reason or other. Those who didn't answer the phones were menials. And she'd say, I'll take the phones this morning. She would say it with a kind of a righteous quality, and I'd say, okay, all right. And I'd walk over to the window, and I had a Prince Albert, one of these big pound Prince Albert cans of tobacco. You've seen the red cans that with the knob on the top. It's a Prince Albert pound can, and which I had found in one of the waste baskets or something there. And I kept all my pencils, which I used to proofread, red pencils and black pencils and wax pencils. And I would go over to this damn Prince Albert can, and I would take a handful of my pencils, and I would stick them into my breast pocket of my shirt. I'd walk over, and I'd sit down, and there on my desk would be the proofs that I had to start out the morning by proofing for the ads for next week. And the smell of the ink, the smell of the tea, the smell of the coral dime store fingernail polish, the smell of the wax pencils, the smell of the stuff they used to clean the floor with every night. They had some kind of a oil compound that they'd spread over the floor like they do in schools, and they would sprinkle the floor with sawdust. That smell was always there. That whole smell of paper clips and petrified rubber bands. And the phone would start to ring, and I'd hear Emily picking up the phone, and she would say, copy. She loved to feel that she was the copy. She was the copy department. Somehow I hated her. She'd say, copy. She said, well, you'll just have to call later. Mr. Snodgrass is not here. Thank you. She'd hang up. And then she'd take her tea bag every day at the same time, the same moment. She would take her tea bag, and she had folded up next to her, always right next to her doily, which she kept in her drawer. She had a paper towel, you know, the kind you get on the John, one of these manila-colored ones. And she would take her tea bag, and she would dip it up and down in the smoke. She would take it out and very carefully put it in this napkin, this towel, and she would fold it up, and she would say to me then, Gene, do you mind? And I'd turn and I'd say, no, of course not, Em. And she would hand me her wet tea bag, at which point I would take her wet tea bag and I would put it in the wastebasket, which was under the drawing table. She'd say, thank you. And the phone would ring, and she'd say, copy. No, Mr. Snodgrass is not in yet, no. This is not Mr. Snodgrass. No, he's not in yet. Thank you. She'd hang up, and I'd smell that fingernail polish. And the door would swing open. We had one of these doors that had half-frosted glass on the top, and it was solid on the bottom. And the door would swing open, and in would walk Warren. And his eyes were rimmed with red. He always had styes. Warren also was a perpetual worker there. He was not a student like I was. He was a victim. He's probably still there. He would come in, and he was always picking at a sty early morning. And then Snodgrass would follow in, and Snodgrass always carried in the morning Chicago Trib. And he always had a mad look on his face. And he'd walk into his little cage and he'd open up the Trib. Say, hey, you guys, any of you see what we bolts have done today? Look at that. How do you like that? And that's our rival, the big department store. Look at that. That's what I mean. That's pure nothing. He folded up as if I cared what Weebolts was doing with the tire sale. And I knew that another day of ineffable, total, complete, thorough, killing, crushing, murdering boredom had begun. Oh, I hate work. WOR New York.